as were righteous, the Varnashram system became properly reestablished. Being pleased, Indra supplied rain at regular intervals, and all auspicious conditions prevailed upon earth. So then what you learn from this here is that good population comes when the consciousness is proper. Right? This modern idea is that, you know, intimacy with women is based on lust to fulfill desires, and that gets bad kids. Because the kids will only be interested in lust. Right? You know what I'm saying? Just like if you take salt and you take sugar and you take, green mango, and you put it together, what will you have? A chutney made out of what? And sugar, not something else. You understand? So whenever you create something, it can only be created out of what it was made from. So if a child is conceived out of lust, then they're made out of lust. So they're not going to be something different. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right? So that's the idea. So that's what one can gain from this point.
That means the whole generation after that kid is wounded?
Well, unless they can, by training and all that, kind of overcome. You know what I'm saying? Because everybody always has free will to adjust. It's just it's harder. You know what I'm saying? It's just harder. But it can be done, because by intelligence, and you can correct whatever is wrong by practice. By good association, by practice, you know, by pure habits, you know, like this, then one can change. Does that make sense? And the most powerful of all of them is chanting Hare Krishna, right? Because that's stronger than anything. So that by chanting and by having determination, then one can purify oneself. Does that make sense? Like that. But we're just saying in general just what happens, because it's not how many people are that determined to change their nature and not, let's say, change, but purify their nature and bring it up to a transcendental level. You know what I'm saying? Very few. So in general, then that's how it works. Does that make sense? Yeah? Later on, when the Daityas were repeatedly defeated by the demigods, they became derived of their residence in heaven, and so began to take birth within this world. Many Daityas were born as the sons of great Kshatriyas, and because of their superior prowess, they became very proud and arrogant. In fact, these demoniac rulers not only oppressed their citizens, but also due to being intoxicated with false pride, they did not hesitate to offend even the great rishis. Right? So, in other words, this very nice age was brought in, because whatever goes on earth affects the whole universe. Right? Because this is the place where is the place of sacrifice. Everywhere else in the universe, they're there due to their activities from being here. Does that make sense? A human being is here. He lives here. Depending upon that, he'll either take birth here again, go up, or go down. Right? So that means everywhere in the universe depends upon how somebody behaved here. Does that make sense? So if people are pious, they're performing sacrifice, they're performing yajna, they're performing austerities, practicing varnashram, then the whole universe actually becomes maintained nicely. Does that make sense? You perform sacrifice here, that produces rain, and then that comes back here as grains. From that, then you can do more sacrifice. And in the sacrifice, then the demigods are maintained. Yes.
So right now, the whole universe is...
It's not doing as well as it would in other yugas, yeah. In other words, when it's Kali Yuga here, then that effect is felt throughout the universe. Less, but it's there. You know what I'm saying? It's just like it's Kali Yuga, you know, in New York, but you feel it much less here. You know what I'm saying? But it's still, its effect is there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah? Like that. So that's why it's important that this is brought out, is because the rulers were all very pious. Right? All very pious and good. And because of that, then the demons were not prospering. The demigods were powerful. Right? So then because of this, then they were always getting defeated, and then they had no place to stay. Right? Because they're not just happy to stay in their place, they got to go take over someone else's place. Right? So then they started taking birth in the families of the Kshatriyas, or in, you know, animal species or anything on the earth, just to have a place and to lord it over. You know, so Kshatriyas, then they would use their power improperly, the animals, and they would behave improperly and all this kind of thing. Does that make sense? You know, because for them it's their ego and everything is what's very important, right? That's why it's very important as a brahmachari that we are not motivated by ego, right? Because ego doesn't get you anywhere. It's a demoniac thing, right? Doesn't mean you're a demon, it just means the quality is not good. Yeah? That makes sense? So that's why it's, so if they can experience that pride of being in a good position and facility and all that, then they're happy. Right? Doesn't matter if it's a demon or as a demigod, I mean as a king or as an animal or whatever it is, as long as they can, you know, feel that pride. Okay. Finally, the presiding deity of the earth, Bhumi, went to Lord Brahma, and with tears in her eyes, she described her pitiable condition. Lord Brahma then took all the demigods and went to the shore of the Milk Ocean, wherein Lord Narayana resides upon the island of Swetadweep. In answer to the demigods' prayers, Lord Vishnu transmitted a message to the heart of Brahma, assuring him that he would soon incarnate upon the earth to relieve her of her burden. The Supreme Lord further ordered his servants, the demigods, to also appear on earth to assist him in his mission. Right? So he would appear and all the demigods would also appear. Right? So they would take part in the pastimes. So you had those who were the eternal associates, like the Pandavas. But you also had those who are the demigods who are, let's say, working for the Lord. Right? They're not exactly associates, but they're doing the Lord's work. Right? They run his offices and stuff like that. Does that make sense? So then, does that make sense? You know, so it's like you have a man, powerful man, and he has an office, right? But the people that work in the office are working for him, they know him and they're doing good things, but they're not his personal associates. That'll be his family, his friends, and others. Does that make sense? Right? So the Lord will come with his personal associates, and the demigods will also come because they're managing the universe, so they'll also come to help manage here, the pastimes. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, Bhumi Devi is
Lakshmi
herself.
Yeah, she's Bhumi.
So why she is always going to Brahma and not going directly to Lord Vishnu?
Because Bhumi is just the office of the earth. So then the authority of the planetary systems is Brahma. And then about Brahma is then her. It's not that Bhumi is always sitting with Varaha, but it's not necessarily, you know what I'm saying, these things are going on both. Krishna's, he's just like this, Krishna's never without the residence of Vrindavan, but at the same time he's in Dwarka. Does that make sense? Like that. So in that same way is that, she, you know, Bhumi will always be with Varaha, but at the same time is she's also playing the part of the demigod. Right? Who then has her duties within the universe, and you know, Brahma's the authority, and like that. Right? So she'll go to Brahma, and Brahma will go to Vishnu. Okay? Does that make sense? Yes.
Before you said
Parasuram. Try that one.
Went around the whole Prabhu. World.
Yeah.
Not the Kshatriyas around the world, yeah. But then it also said that they also ran away from the place. Right?
Yeah, some of them ran away. They went out to, Prabhupada mentions the Kshatriyas, because, see, taking that kind of martial role, you have Kshatriyas as kings, you have Vaishyas as kings of villages, like Nanda Maharaj was a king, but he's actually a Vaishya. He's just king of Vaishyas, he's not king of Kshatriyas and Brahmas, you know what I'm saying? So then, and you have Shudras, because Shudras are like warriors and police and guards and those kind of things, right? Huh?
I showed you that in temples.
Yeah, like that. Because he's hired by someone. So the Kshatriyas, they fled and went to Europe, right? Does that make sense? Like that, because the Vaishyas came, they fled towards China, right? And the Shudras, then they fled to Africa. Okay, makes sense? Because you see, in Africa, they're warring tribes. They're not peaceful. I think there's only one or two that are peaceful. Everything else fights like anything.
But
those places are like out in the jungle.
They weren't part of the world?
Means they're part of the world. There'll be somebody who is kind of their area. But it's just like Africa was just jungle. Europe was just jungle. And China wasn't also very developed. That side over there.
So
it's all just
China. No kingdoms or anything?
They're not really. Not, you understand this? Kingdoms, like as we see here, is they'll be all over. Someone will be king of that tract of land. But there won't be really much happening because it's just tribals living out there and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? And then like that. So there'll also be tribal kings, so they may also have to be removed if they're behaving badly. So he may go through there. But, you know, it's a big place. You can go hide. You know, so they went into Central Asia, from Central Asia, because the only way to get out of here is either you go through the deserts out in Iran, Iraq, you know, Afghanistan, that, or you go through the Khyber Pass and go up into Central Asia, and then from Central Asia then you go across. So because those places were inhabited, because like all through Afghanistan and those places, northern parts of Iran, and well, even Iran, Iraq, those places were all inhabited. But a lot of those kings over there, civilizations were already degraded because they had already left previous. They had already gone also before. They had been kicked out of India. Like that.
Also, it said that the false kings of Rajayati.
One of them went out that way. I think it's Anu. Anu then became king of that whole like desert region over there. Yeah. So they went out there. So there's a lot that's happening out there. So it's going on, but it's not as prominent. So it's kingdoms, but it's so much big, huge jungles, so you can hide. He's not going chasing around people that are hiding. You know what I'm saying? Means fight people who come out and fight, and then you fight with them because they're kings. The other ones are tribals, so they're living as tribals. Right? They're still living today as tribals. Right? So basically, cut down all the forest. That's all. Yeah.
So the part that Parshan trapped mainly was the middle of Asia.
It would be like from over. I would probably say predominantly would be over to like Afghanistan. And then up above that a little bit, and up skirting the Himalayas, and then coming down probably, you know, like here, Bengal, or a little bit farther. You know? That's the main. Outside of that, there would be kings, but I think they're more recent. But there were Sumatra, the island in Indonesia, that was always inhabited like that. There was also tribals. You know, they all respected the Vedic culture and they followed, just like you see Bali. There's so much of the Vedic culture is going on. But they considered themselves kind of low class. So them following what they're following now, it's pretty good. So you can imagine how good was the rest of the culture. They thought they were not doing so good. Like that. Does this make some sense? In other words, there's the principle that it is and it isn't. Right? Just like say you have a you take any country, right? And much of the country is just forest. Isn't it? Like that. So then, you know, you have your city and that's where the kingdom is and that's where the kings are, but they're not out in the jungles. Does that make some sense? Like that. So if those Kshatriyas go and hide out there, then they're like tribals, and as long as they're not making, you know, they're not seen or don't challenge or don't make any trouble, then they're left alone. Because they're not functioning as the kings anymore. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's kind of like that's where the real civilized that follow the Vedic culture would be. Outside of that, it's all connected, because those kings will have their influence, like that, like Arjuna, the northern Kurus and all that would go all the way up, you know, past the Himalayas as we know it now. Like that, the other side, you know, you start getting all the plateau and beyond that.
Vaishnavji also said that the Egyptians, they're actually Kshatriyas and Brahmanas mixed.
They're one group. Your Egyptians, your Babylonians, Assyrians, Sumerians, they were all different groups that were at some point kicked out of India. Because there were 12 tribes that attacked one king and killed him. And so then the sun went and caught them all and then banished them from India. Right? And they couldn't study the Veda and like that. So then they have that basic in the Vedic culture, and those understandings will only be handed down by word of mouth. So eventually it starts to adjust and change according to the mentality of the people and the place and everything like that. So then you get particular. It also, I think, says what he would do. Somebody shaved the head, somebody shaved this, somebody did that. He did funny things. And so that kind of became their thing. Like you see some of them just have a no beard anywhere, but just only this long goatee, or some of the all different things. If you look at these old pictures of all these Babylonians, Assyrians, and all them, they had some unique.
But looks like their culture is also very like high, because at least that's what I think.
It's high compared to now, because you're getting people who were following the Vedic culture who then are not following so much. So they're still very powerful and very focused and all that compared to nowadays.
No, but even before, like they used to like mummify or something like that?
Yeah. I'm saying they would have a lot of knowledge. You know? They would have a lot of knowledge. And they would have a lot of abilities. But what I'm saying is it looks great, but therefore if that's great, you can understand how great was the Vedic culture itself. Does that make sense? I mean, you don't hear of them going out with you know, a bow and arrow and fighting off, you know, 60,000 Navitakavachas and, you know, flying in the sky in their chariots, or chanting mantras and astras and, you know, turning one arrow into 50,000, or using to put everyone to sleep. Right? You know what I'm saying? They would have a little bit of some powers, but not so much. They could still do big things and build big things, but that's an art. You know what I'm saying? They can build a big building, but they can't do all the things. But then, before, you used to have big buildings. In India, you have, you know, I think Ravana had a 10-story palace. Right? And in the Vedic, in Vastu, is each floor as you go up, you take whatever this floor is, you take off 1/12. And then the next one becomes that much smaller, and 1/12 off, take it off like that. Does that make sense? So that means is that the top floors are actually smaller and the bottom floors are bigger. So if you get a 10-story building, you know, then that means the bottom story must be quite big. Right? Does that make sense?
Does that work with as height? Does it go, does it kind of come in as well, like in grade? You know, like 12, you said 12?
No, it's just the height.
Okay.
It just comes down. So the top floors are shorter. So if your top floor is 10 foot, that means you would have added on more than 10 like that. So your bottom floor would be like more than 20 feet. You know?
That's why there are some gopuras like that.
Yeah.
It's big, small, small.
Yeah, it's bigger at the bottom, gets smaller, smaller, smaller. Just a principle like that. So, you know, they used to build big things before, like that. There they just build big blocky things, but not so carved or anything. A little bit of carving, but not so much. You know, it's more just size and big like that.
But when each temple was built similar like this in Vrindavan?
Similar like?
By shortening one and one?
You see it a little bit, but it's mainly just one story. You just have the one thing, and then you have on the big sikara, like that. But you do see that the upper things are smaller than what's down. It also gives a sense more of height, that it's smaller, you know, there and bigger here. You know, looks, makes it look taller also. Does that make sense?
So, as more in a European, East Asian and African cultures and population, are they populated from kshatriyas that fled?
The European is. African would be from the Shudras, and the Orientals would be from the Vaishyas. That's why you see is that the Europeans, the main thing is going out and conquering. Right? Africans just fighting with each other. You know, and the, you know, the foot soldiers, they don't think beyond that. The Chinese, the Vaishyas, they were kings like that. So you have that combination between the martial nature and the business nature. So it's, it reflects what they were, you know, what the gene pool that they were from.
So basically, America was like tribes.
Yeah, it was Kashas. It was from the China, that whole. Kashas means those who don't grow beards. Right? It's not so much the color, you know, some of you think Oriental because they're yellow, but some are yellow, some are not. Some of the Chinese are yellow, some of them are not. You know, I think your Japanese are not, your Koreans are also a different color. But, you know, so they all have that kind of look. The Thais, they're not. You know? So it's just this one group of, I think the Chinese are the kind of a little bit yellowish. But what's the point? The American Indians, they were kind of more reddish, like that. The same thing. They don't grow beards. You know, they can grow a little bit wispy here, a little here, a little upper here. They can't grow a full beard. You don't see. Very rare you see any of the Orientals with full beards. You know, it's a rare thing. I think there are a couple of them, you know, that is individuals, but it's a general thing they don't. So that's kashas. So that whole, basically as you see is that you go from, in India, you go up towards the northeast and you start to get the Oriental look, you know, and then the Manipuris, they look Chinese, or even the language sounds that. So that just continues out of India like that, right? And then you go up to the northwest. Yeah, like that, the Punjabi is as big and like this and that, and that's what continues out on that side. Does that make sense? Like that. Yeah? Okay, just finish this paragraph. The Supreme Lord ordered his servants, the demigods, to also appear on earth to assist him in his mission. Thus, in order to counter the many daityas who had taken birth as kshatriyas, the demigods began to assume human forms. Some of these incarnations are listed below. Okay, so then tomorrow we'll get into who took birth as who, like that, because that's interesting, because all the major players in the Mahabharata, they're all either they're either the demons or the demigods, like that. All comes. So it was more than just human beings fighting. The Mahabharata and the war of the Mahabharata was actually a fight between the demigods and the demons.
The Kauravas were demons and
yeah, that'll come up.
Was Kana a demon or a demon?
He was a demon. Yeah. Like that. Yeah, it'll come out. The music gives all the names of who's who.
to with Brahma to pray to Mahavishnu.
Yeah, yeah.
They usually chant the Purusha Chakra, right?
Yeah, they always chant.
When they say Chandra Mahamana Saha Jata, are they talking about they themselves, demigods, or something?
No, no. This is before the creation. This is the Purusha Shukta is the primary creation.
But the demigods chant that, right?
Yeah, but it's the primary, not the secondary. They're a manifestation of the secondary creation, the creation of Brahma. But the Purusha Shukta is the creation of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu.
Garbhodakshaya Vishnu created some demigods and then Brahma created.
He creates the position and the potency. Does that make sense? Then Brahma creates who fulfills that post. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay.
How the behavior of one person whose activities are moved by ego, how he
behaves? How he behaves. He's very proud of, he thinks he's very qualified, and generally thinks others are less qualified. And if there's ego, there's generally a sense you don't mind exploiting someone else. In other words, you're self-centered, you do what you want to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You do what you want to do. Like that. Because if you're humble, then you follow the order of authority. But if you're proud, then you want to do what you want to do and not follow authority. That's why even in everybody, there's some of these bad qualities. Right? It means in the Satyayuga, the demons and demigods lived on different planetary systems. Right? Like that. You know, so demons live in the lower planets, so demigods live in the higher planets. In the Treta Yuga, they live on different continents. You know, like Ramachandra is here and Ravana is on another continent. Right? He's on the, right? In the Dwapara Yuga, they're in different families. Right? But in the Kali Yuga, they're in the same body. Yeah. Hi, Bob? Okay. I think someone's trying to get a hold of me. Okay. All right. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.